Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
If you care about nature, if the beauty and wonder of the wild places inspires you, if you've recently turned on to the likes of Rachel Carson, E.O. Wilson, or the ivory-billed woodpecker, that is, if you're a full-fledged, green-blooded all-American who gets it that nature matters, then drop everything and buy a ticket right now to Washington, D.C. We'll tell you why when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. Sometimes life just isn't fair. I just got back from about a week in San Francisco, which I don't get a chance to get away. Doing radio really keeps you kind of, at least at this phase, locked into a place. And unfortunately, that means that I will not be able to attend a most amazing event unless something intervenes, which is magical. Washington, D.C. is going to be an exciting place for about a week and a half between March 15th today, and about a week and a half, actually, through the Sunday, the March 25th, as the 15th Annual Environmental Film Festival launches, and it's an amazing event. It truly is, and I wish that I could be there. And to help us understand what is really going to be happening is the event's artistic director, Flo Stone, who's joining us now from the nation's capital. Flo, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you for having me, Sydney.
This is an amazing event for so many different reasons. First of all, why don't you just give us some of the basics and the history on the Environmental Film Festival?
Well, I actually founded the festival 15 years ago. It was a small then. It was an idea to have a collaborative festival very broadly on the environment, where there wouldn't be film submissions, but you would cooperate with partners, museums, libraries, embassies, grassroots organizations, theaters, and present films that were very broadly environmental, mostly free, almost all free, and engaging and welcoming to the public.
Originally, how many films did you air?
We showed about, the first year, I think we showed about 30, and about 1,200 people came. Last year, over 20,000 people came to the festival, and right today we start with 115 films at 47 different places around Washington, D.C.
It is absolutely amazing, and one of the things that struck me as I was going through this extraordinary list of films that takes 6 pages to print out, and that is the fact that most of these are being presented free.
That's right, and we really, our whole effort is to extend interest, welcome the public, broaden the audience.
Well, how does that work? If a person wants to go to a free event, do they just show up, or what happens?
They show up. In some cases, reservations are required, so we don't, in smaller places and places like embassies and certain theaters, they don't want to turn people away at the door. But it's first-come, first-served basis, and there's some very large auditoriums in Washington that seat 500 people, like the Natural History Museum, the Smithsonian, and theaters, and everyone is welcome.
There are various films that really appeal to kids specifically,
right,
as well as films that really push the edge a little bit. So let's talk about some of that diversity.
We note in our program our mascot is a frog, and we put a tadpole by films that are for families and children, and there are a lot of those, just to signal those to for the audience. As for the kinds of films we show, they're mostly documentaries. Some are very hard-hitting issue documentaries. Others are feature films, archival films, animation, and films about artists, photographers, architecture, as well as water, global warming, and just a full range of environmentally focused films.
I think one of the things that has to be exciting is the fact that with the digital revolution comes the capacity for lots of people, lots of independent filmmakers to get out there with a simple digital video camera, as well as the software to produce these things in home and on a small budget, and that's really added to the variety of films.
Absolutely, and we have at American University, along with Earth Echo International, Chris Palmer, who runs environmental filmmaking at American University, with Philippe Cousteau, who's Jacques Cousteau's grandson, and with his sister Alexandra, runs Earth Echo International, are having student films, which I think is just wonderful, short student films.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you some of the films that struck me right off. There's just so many. But, for example, there's a film about E.O. Wilson, the legendary environmentalist. We'll talk about that a little bit. There's also a film about Rachel Carson, who I think is probably responsible in this last century for really invigorating it and revitalizing an environmental movement. It just brought things so to consciousness through her work.
Rachel Carson changed so many people's lives with her writing, Silent Spring, etc. The film about her is a fascinating film. It's a 1963. Eric Sevride is the moderator. It's a CBS report called The Silent Spring of Rachel Carson. And in 1963, you were interviewed for an hour with little segues, so it will be a very interesting evening to see this film in the National Archives. And her great-nephew, whom she adopted after her niece died, when he was about 9, who rarely appears in public, is going to be with the film. So that will be an extremely exciting evening, and many letters were written in protest of airing that program, but CBS went ahead and did it. The other film you mentioned, the E.O. Wilson film, speaking of someone who's also made a huge difference, E.O. Wilson mm-hmm. is a emeritus professor of biology at Harvard. He has won 2 Pulitzer Prizes for his writings, particularly on his research on ants. And this is a film about his own life, why he became interested in the natural world, why he's devoted his life to teaching and writing, and now he is extremely active in advocating environmental stewardship. And this will be a wonderful thing because it'll be a work in progress. And so the audience will be able to discuss it with E.O. Wilson, with the filmmakers and the producers, and it'll be a wonderful evening, and a tribute, of course, to him. Another work in progress that should be extremely exciting is Lord God Bird. This is a film by George Butler, who became famous early on for making the film Pumping Iron about your governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yes.
And then has gone on to make a series of fascinating feature documentaries, The Endurance, about Ernest Shackleton's trip to the Antarctic, etc. Mm-hmm. And we're having a mini retrospective of his work of environmental films, and he will also premiere this film as a work in progress and discuss it with the audience with Dr. John Fitzpatrick, who is the head of the Cornell Lab for Ornithology.
Yeah, it's such a timely topic right now because there's still...
And it's mythic. It's mm-hmm. mythic, and I realized that I was just thinking myself, I have to introduce him, that in a way this will be the ultimate natural history film, because why is it that... Why is this huge excitement generated by a species enormous bird, a striking-looking bird, but that people felt was extinct. But the point is it still alive? And in order for it to exist, it must have old-growth forests.
Yes. We talked with some of the researchers on the Wild Side News. There's also a film about called Rare Bird, which is somewhat similar.
Yes, Rare Bird is about finding a bird that on an island off Bermuda that... A young man, David Wingate, found it when he was 15, and he became he has studied it all his life, and it's a film about his life and about this bird, and it's a lovely film that won a special prize in the Bermuda Film Festival last fall, and this will be a Washington premiere as well.
Now, also, I've noticed, and another reason that I would love to be there is that there's going to be not just the filming of the films, but as well discussion. And, for example, Dr. David Suzuki is going to be present. He's one of my favorite people.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that, because we're so thrilled he can be here again at the festival. And he will speak about his whole life. He's going to show film and slides and discuss his new autobiography at the Natural History Museum. This is open, free. Anyone can come. And you know well how fantastic David Suzuki is with an audience. He's just phenomenal. And he's not that well known in the States, although, of course, in Canada, where for over 46 years he's been on television on the nature of things, doing science programs, he's known everywhere.
Yes, I did an in-depth interview with him, and it was definitely one of the best shows, because he's just such a real person.
Exactly.
So accessible and so wise.
And, so wise, so accessible. And we have, as of today, we have 107 filmmakers, special guests, and scientists coming. And one thing that's wonderful about David Suzuki is he just comes in, you know, rolling his suitcase, and there he is, and he just gives everything to an audience or to an interview, which is what your experience has been.
Do you have that information on when that specific event may happen?
Oh, it will be on Saturday, the 17th of March at 3:30 in the Baird Auditorium, which is the largest auditorium at the Smithsonian, the Baird Auditorium at the National Museum of Natural History.
I guess we should also help people understand how they can learn everything they need to know about this.
Absolutely. If they go to the web to www.dcenvironmentalfilmfest.org, the entire program is there. And for people outside of Washington who can't come, you can read the descriptions, and also under film information, you can go to Print Source and see where these films come from.
Oh, wow.
Because so many people from this very large and program that we've put together and with so many different organizations, so many other people in this country and around the world want to do presentations themselves of film.
That's really important. From my perspective, this is some of the most important information that the world needs to know right now and from this point forward. How many of these films actually make it to some form of mainstream media like Discovery Channel or Nature or others, and what percentage perhaps only air through festivals like yours?
Well, we're in a special year because of An Inconvenient Truth, Davis Guggenheim's film about Al Gore's PowerPoint presentation, of course, on global warming. And the fact that that reached millions of people in this country and around the world and in DVD and just got the Academy Award shows that a fine film can be received by the general public. But many of these films, a film like Duma by the brilliant filmmaker Carol Ballard,
yes,
who has made in his life so many films about animals and people. That magnificent film, which we premiered the film festival last year and are showing this year, the National Gallery in Washington is showing it as a film for families and children, never reached a wide theatrical distribution. So here was a famous filmmaker, and that film didn't reach the distribution that it very richly deserved.
And what you're inspiring, really, is the opportunity for people to put on their own local film festivals and bring these movies out to their cities and towns and neighborhoods, literally.
Exactly. That's why we just decided that when we put our program up, we put very comprehensive descriptions of the films. It's not just a phrase. We put who made the film, the year it was made, the length, and a very, very comprehensive description, because of course we want people to come and we want them to kind of read, you know, films are many, many things, and we want people to find in that description things that are interesting to them, but we also want it to be available to anyone who couldn't be here to kind of look through and make their own.
And people can as well download the entire program as a PDF file from your website, which is...
Yes, they absolutely can.
Which is beautifully done, and it provides it's worth reading all by itself. Well, this is an amazing event, and this is what I'm going to encourage people to do, particularly those who are in D.C. or even literally all over the country. I think the most important thing for us to do is contact our local Congress representatives in the Senate and the House and others.
Oh, that's a wonderful idea.
And just encourage them, maybe sponsor them, say, listen, I'm willing to hop on your arm and take you to my favorite film.
That's a wonderful idea.
I really think people should do precisely that. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
These are the people who are going to make the difference. Unfortunately, it's kind of in their hands more than it is in ours sometimes, but it's our responsibility to encourage them and get them out. So if you have a favorite film, as you look through all the information, contact your representative and tell them, let them know that they need to go see this particular film. And it's all over Washington, D.C. And
be part of this celebration. It's a celebration, but it also has very serious content, as well as films that are humorous and films from 27 different countries in the world.
Nature is a very wonderful and complex reality, and this film festival reflects that so brilliantly. Flo, I'm just curious now. You've created this 15 years ago. Obviously, there's something about all of this that's very important to you. I'm curious what really stands out for you in terms of a film or two that really speak to you in 2007.
There's so many of them, but quality films. The film about the sculptor Andy Goldsworthy, Rivers and Tides, which we premiered a few years ago. Of course, An Inconvenient Truth. That's a powerful, enormously important film. And I happen to love animation. And so we have an evening with the animator, Bill Plimpton, who does all kinds of animated films. But we have gone to him. He's come to the festival before, but he's made 3 or 4 new films since he was here. And we went to him and said, we want to show your environmental films. And I remember he said, you've got the wrong guy. And we said, no. Lucas, the Ear of Corn, Parking, which is about a film about a parking lot attendant who has to get rid of grass. A wonderful film, The Exciting Life of a tree that has survived all sorts of, you know, centuries of development and all the rest, is great. And I'm also introducing a series of animated films at the National Geographic because I think short animated films that are powerful. There's one wonderful one called First Flight, very amusing, but it's a man at a bus stop trying to teach a bird how to fly. Another film called Tree Officer that describes what it's like when you hear all the complaints from people about street trees. They're wonderful short films, and they're made by artists. And the artistry of film has to be an incredible asset in our understanding and perception of the environment.
We've been talking with Flo Stone, who is the founder and as well creative director of the Environmental Film Festival that's happening in the nation's capital. Flo, why don't you give us the summary of the event and how people can find out once more how they can participate?
It will take place from March 15th today through the 25th at all over Washington, D.C. The website is www.dcenvironmentalfilmfest.org, and anyone is welcome to call our office, 202-342-2564, and we'd be happy to mail you a brochure, a printed program. There will be 115 films in the festival. They're extremely diverse. In some ways, I think they really reflect the diversity of the planet itself. And we hope that what we'll get is attention and interest and appreciation. And I will say that filmmakers know so much about the subjects of their films, and it's wonderful at events where they can be speaking about their films because they also learn a lot from the audiences.
Flo, you've done a magnificent job over the last 15 years, and I wish you great success in the week and a half ahead.
Thank you so much. Bye.
From the legendary masters of film and video, we're next off to a master of word and action as we cross the wide country to the blue wonder of the high desert in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Dave Foreman, the godfather of eco-activism, has his own fireside chat. Settle in. It's all coming up here on the Wild Side News.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.